Hello, everybody. I'm grateful for coming out. My name is Rodney.
Hi,
everybody. I'm here to talk about who was an addict, man. And let me start off. We all down our way. We always give our clean date. My clean date is October 4th of 1987. So I've learned a whole lot about how much of an addict I am in the last 21 years. This is like a qualifying statement for me, who was an addict. Because I don't know about you, but for years I wanted to act like I was something else. I didn't want to be an addict because of the persona that went with what an addict was, somebody under a bridge or somebody that was all beat up. And for years I wasn't that dude. I mean, you know, I sold drugs, I did a lot of other things, man. And, you know, but my addiction, I come to find out since I've been clean, my addiction took off the very first day I took the first one because I liked it. And I didn't just like it. As soon as I took, I remember taking my first drink, I wanted more. Once I got that feeling, I started chasing that feeling for all those years, man. And I got high for 19 years from the time I was 12 till I was 31. And I'm going to tell you, if I look at, let's just take a trip down memory lane, man, because this was a qualifying step for me. I had to literally qualify as an addict before I bought into any Narcotics Anonymous stuff. So as I look back and I started to qualify, I started to look at, you know, my junior high school years. I came up in the late 60s, early 70s, and it was like free of mind through sex, drugs, and alcohol. Everybody was doing the drug thing. It was just what was happening, man. But I never drank, or I never smoked weed, or I never took acid or mescaline or anything. I never did any of that stuff socially. I always did it to the extremes. If you did one, I wanted to do five. If you, because back then, I don't know about you guys, but we called people who couldn't get high lightweights. And I didn't want to be considered a lightweight. Not realizing that every time I overdid it, I was feeding this addiction, man. It was like a shovel, man, in an oven, and you're just feeding it cold, and you're feeding it cold, and it keeps getting hot, keeps getting hotter, and keeps getting hotter. And as I graduated into addiction, what started out in high school as getting high on the weekends, and I don't know about you guys, but somebody in here can relate to just getting high on the weekends before the football game or whatever. It turned out that, you know, I was getting high not every day of the week, all day until it ran out every day of the week. Because I was that dude, you know, who had some skills. I've been playing drums for 40 plus years now, and you know, stenographer, word processor, and other things that I do. I couldn't do that because if I did that, I might have missed that last buck, that last hit that was out there waiting on me. So I couldn't work. I had to hustle for mine. But anyway, getting back to the early addiction piece. So as I was, going through my high school years, and I ended up going to a private school, and come to find out there were more drugs in the private school than there were in the public school. You know, I started to experiment with things that I didn't even know existed, like cocaine and heroin and things like that. They didn't have that in the public school system. Now, again, I'm qualifying. I don't glorify this disease at all, but we do have to qualify in order to feel comfortable here. As I started to qualify in high school, as I was graduating high school, and drugs and alcohol had become a major part of my life, things started to change. My grades started to go bad. I started doing things that I normally wouldn't do just to get money to get high. Every dime that I had was pretty much either going to getting high or getting me somewhere whereas I could get high. You know, all of my money, my focus was more on getting high than college or having a family or having a career. My focus was on where's the next party at and how could we make this party work? How could it get, you know, how could we party much harder? Ended up going to the military, and again, I'm just qualifying who was an addict. I get out of high school and I go on tour with a band. Now, here's the thing about musicians. Music at that point meant a whole bunch of drugs. Every place we went, people always got the musicians high. Again, 60s, 70s, that's what we did. We got high. That was the thing, man. So everywhere I go, if I had no drugs, I knew I was still going to get high. Now I'm going to qualify everybody in this room. How many of you at some point in time in your addiction, now watch this, woke up with no money, but you knew you were going to get high that day. Woke up, no money. Now, that's unanimous. That's across the room. Knew we were going to get high. The funny part about that, we come to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, and we may have to go to some other type of facility to get here, but we want to act like we don't have a problem with drugs and alcohol. But I just made one simple statement, and everybody could qualify. I woke up knowing I wasn't going to have, didn't have any money, and was going to get high. Then these are the people that I kind of hated. You saved some from last night for the next day. See, I couldn't do that. I wasn't that dude. I got high till it ran out, and then I had to hustle the next day. You know what I mean? By doing by any means necessary. So anyway, I go on tour with this band, and my addiction took off to a place where I knew there was a problem. And by knowing there was a problem, I started to do the escape route. And this was my escape route, go to the military, because I knew something was wrong. So I escaped to the military. Come to find out, the military is a breeding ground for drug addicts and alcoholics, because you got three hots in a cot guaranteed, you have an income, and you can wash your butt every day. So you can spend all your money, which is what I did, getting high or hustling, trying to find ways and means to get more. Now, to be honest with you, I really wasn't a drug dealer. I sold enough drugs to keep me high all the time. Now, drug dealers, real drug dealers, they make money. I had, you know, if anybody sold drugs, we might have a good run for a while. We might make some money. You know, we might do all right for a while. But then when the addiction takes off, we can't make money because we're too busy focused on the get high. For example, here was one of my things, man. When I was selling drugs, I didn't sell street drugs. I sold other types of drugs. But what I would do is I would start getting high and get so paranoid I couldn't go out in the streets and collect my money. Anybody home? Can you relate to that? Just being so paranoid, you see somebody, my man, okay, that's what I'm talking about. So paranoid, we can't even focus on going to get the money that's going to keep us getting high. Watch this. You start getting high, and behind the leg of that chair, the police is there. Somebody know, you see what I'm saying? Behind the leg of the chair. Now, no man, no human being can fit behind the leg of that chair, but we are so paranoid. Or we start getting high, and it's like, don't nobody say nothing. Like, I was the kind of cat, I would ruin your high. Once I started getting high, I didn't want to hear no noise. And I kept me some guns on me. That meant don't get high. So normally when people got tired of getting high with me, they just leave. So I'm there by myself anyway. Can anybody relate to being that lonely? Don't nobody want to be around, junkie. You know what I mean? Don't nobody want to be around because you're blowing everybody's high. But we can't stop. We can't stop. Here's another. I'm just qualifying. I'm making sure that we're all in the right place here. Here's another one. Go to jail, I ain't never getting high again. Anybody relate? I ain't never getting high again. This is it for me. You couldn't pay me to get high. 5 minutes after you hit the streets, where the first place we go? To the sick. But I don't qualify as an addict. I'm not an addict. This is just what I do. You feel me? It's just what I do. And here, now it's become a habit. It's okay, I go to jail, I get out, I go to the set. Go to jail, get out, go to the set. Or we got the people that, and I used to work at a recovery house, at a rehab facility, and we have the people in the revolving door. You know, you get clean, you get some clean time, get high, back to the rehab, back to jail, get clean, get high, back to rehab, back to jail. Never wanting to deal with the truth of the matter is, the problem is not the drugs. It's me. I tell people all the time, I've been clean 21 years. How could I possibly blame the drugs on any of my behavior? Well, guess what? It was the same thing while I was using. I can't blame drugs and alcohol for what I allowed it to do to me. Here's something that we need to look at as drug addicts, man, in recovery. We were not victimized by the drugs. I don't know about you, but every time I got high, I volunteered to get a dope man my money. I volunteered to get it ingested in whatever way I got it in. The drugs never did anything to me that I didn't allow it to do. Not just allow it to do, that I wanted it to do. Then we come in here and we act like we're scared of getting high, you know, and I tell people all the time, we are not afraid of the drugs. The drugs, and this is the example that I always use, man. If I'm on the north side getting ready to cop, and somebody on the south side said the dope on the south side just killed somebody, you know where I'm going. I'm going to the south side. But I don't want to come in here and admit that I'm a drug addict. What's wrong with me? The evidence is in place. Your parents don't want you in the house no more. The evidence is in place. Can't hold a job. The evidence in place is in place. And my thing is this. Every time I went to jail and the judge said, go to jail, I was convicted on what? Evidence. It was just evidence. It was raw evidence. It was in front of my face. You did it. Here's the proof. Boom. Now, when I worked my first step, and I got to go through the steps on this one. When I worked my first step, what I was taught to do was this. Talk about the things, write it on paper, because my sponsor believes in writing. Write about the getting and using and finding ways and means to get more. Ask yourself this question, man, and I'm not going to put you on Front Street, but ask yourself this question. What would I do to get drugs? You know what that answer turns out being? What wouldn't I do to get drugs? What would I do once I got high, because that's now I'm high, to get more? No, what wouldn't I do to get more? So you got the getting and using and finding ways and means to get more. Writing that alone. And once we start to write this stuff down, you know, we write, like for me, and I'll share some of my first step with you because it's what it was. It's the truth. The truth of the matter is, it's July, and I can't drink cold water because I just sold the refrigerators out of the house and the freezer. If that ain't some junky stuff, I don't know. Got to sleep on the floor because the beds are gone. Because, see, I got to get high. And then we want to talk about, you know, well, I lost my refrigerators. I lost my freezer. I lost my bed. I lost my speakers. Dig this, man. I know exactly where my speakers were. I know exactly where I didn't lose nothing. I gave it away to the dope man just to get high. But watch this one. And here's another thing that is really important to me. We talk about how I lost my self-esteem, how I lost my self-worth, how I lost my positive self-image. You know, when I look in the mirror, I don't like the person that I see. No, I didn't lose none of that. I gave it to the dope man. And dig this, I just didn't give it to him. I paid him to take it. Come on. I paid him to take it. Would you please take my self-esteem? Would you please take my children's father? Would you please take my mother and father's child? Would you please not help me look at myself in the mirror? Would you please help me feel, Lord, and well at the bottom of the ocean? Think about that. But we want to blame the dope. We want to blame the dope man. No, it ain't the dope. It ain't the dope man. What I learned about recovery when I got here is this. Look in the mirror, be responsible for your recovery, just like you were responsible for your get high. Because, see, I didn't need nobody to help me get high, like we all just said a few minutes ago. We woke up in the morning knowing we was going to get high and was broke before we went to bed that night. Guaranteed. Man, look, since I've been in recovery, man, I've heard so much stuff that if I ever relapse again, oh, I could get high forever because y'all taught me a whole lot about how to get high. Thank God that ain't the part that matters. Because I know more about recovery now, but when you come around these rooms and you hear things and you hear about, you know, doing this to get high and doing that to get high, and then some of us think we don't qualify because we didn't do that yet. We don't qualify because I didn't do what my man here might have did, or what my man or what my sister here might have done. Yeah, I may not have done that, but, you know, I learned this a long time ago in recovery. I haven't done it yet. YET, you're eligible too. Yes, I'm eligible to do that. Yeah, I haven't crossed that boundary yet. I haven't crossed that road yet. But who am I? What makes me so different than everybody in here who's showing me how messed up I am by the stuff I agree to? See, if I don't look at what I haven't done and just go by what I agree to, my God, ain't no way in the world I should want to do anything but recover. Because if I look at what I haven't done, yeah, I can use that as an excuse to go relapse. We all haven't done something that, I don't even know this brother, but I know he has done something that I didn't do. But the common bond is, well, you did. Don't be laughing. So the common bond is not in what he didn't do or what he did that I didn't do. The common bond is we did the same thing. You know what I'm saying? That's the common bond. I've been knowing Lizzie for years. I look at the common bond. The common bond. Listen, man, there's something that we all did that we can create a common bond with. And this is such a simple thing. Check this out. We all did this. It's the common bond. Too much, too often, for too long. Common bond. Common bond. If you smoked for one day, and that one day got you here, that was too much, too often, too long. I just haven't had 19 years of too much, too often, too long. There's people in the rooms of non-carcinomics that ain't even 19 years old. But they still have a too much, too often, for too long piece happening here. You know what I'm saying? And by that being the case, what makes me think now who is an addict? Me. I qualify. I just qualified everybody in this room. Now, you may not want to be qualified, but if your butt is here on this spiritual retreat, you're an addict. It's real simple. Because there's a whole lot of things we could be doing on Friday night and hanging out at a spiritual retreat with a bunch of dope fiends that ain't even trying to get out. Hello? Because on my Friday nights, when my Friday night started Wednesday, if it didn't stop from last Friday, you know what I'm saying? Because I've done whole week runs, you know what I'm saying? Somebody even know what I'm talking about. I've done whole week runs. But I don't want to qualify. I don't want to qualify. I remember this one time, man. I got to qualify. This is a funny thing, man. If you ain't having fun in your recovery, if you can't laugh at the knucklehead stuff you do or you've done, then your recovery really ain't going to be fun. I'm going to tell you right now. I remember I used to call myself halfway cool, had a little greasy Jerry curl. You know, I had it when I came in the room with Narcotics Anonymous. Grease just, I do that, y'all get wet in the back, right? So think this. So I'm out getting high, man. I see this girl, she about that big. Now, I'm 170, 175. Now, back then, I was about a buck 45, soaking wet, rocks in my pocket and pistols. For real. You know how that... Y'all know how that crack be doing us, man. You know, we be like super thin. This girl, I swear, she was 250, 260 easy. But dig this. I'm qualifying now. That girl had all the dope the night before. Bring your big, fat, thin butt over here, girl. Twiggy. See, I made her think like she was Twiggy. You know why? She had what what I needed. See, wanting to get high and needing to get high is two different things. You know, there were very few times after I crossed the fine line of addiction that I wanted to get high. The disease said, feed me, and feed me you must, at all costs. What you mean all costs, Rod? Go down to your mama's house, and if she don't give you something, take some. I never took nothing from my kids, but this is a story that I've heard. I did. I took their father away from them. Yes, I did. I took some from my children. They didn't have a spiritual retreat. I'll be nice. They didn't have a father. They had a baby daddy at best, and not a good one of them. And not a good baby daddy. Think about this. And then we want to wonder, why am I having so much flack from my children in my early recovery? Examine the evidence. Why does not my mother and my father trust me in their home in early recovery? Examine the evidence. When I go and apply for this job and my job history says job for a week, hit a lick, go get high for a month, find another job, work for a week, hit a lick, get that paper. Why don't these people want to hire me? Examine the evidence. It's evidence. Everything that qualifies us for being here, if you write a good first step, is documented. Put it on paper. You can't be confused and think this. Once it's on paper, you can't be confused, especially if my sponsor told me to ask God to help me write everything that I wrote. So I did. I got on my knees and I'm like, God, please, man, just help me. Because, see, anybody can do an assignment. I can write pages of what I've done, and it don't affect me spiritually at all. At all, at all. Spiritual retreat. I'm talking spiritual things now. Anybody can write as an assignment. Anybody. We can write stuff down, and most of the stuff we write when it's an assignment is real surface stuff. Stuff that we really don't care about in the first place. But what about Rodney when you were using your dad's needles because he was scared of AIDS and HIV, and he was a diabetic, and he almost died. What about that? See, you don't want to talk about that because that hurts. See, we want to come to Narcotics Anonymous and start dealing with who is an addict without the pain of who is an addict. Oh, it's painful being an addict when you got to deal with the real, when you got to look at yourself in the mirror and see the truth. It's painful. If you think you coming in here and you ain't doing no pain, you're a fool. Not just a fool, spiritual retreat, but I got to say it like this, a damn fool. Because one thing I know is the behaviors that I exhibited to my family, loved ones, and friends, they will never be right. So they always supposed to hurt. When I think about what I just said right now, and I literally almost killed my father a couple times, it hurts when I say it. And it's supposed to, because it's still wrong. Now, it's not a devastating, overwhelming pain anymore. It's just the truth about my situation. But if I'd have never put it on paper, I'd have still been faking the funk in front of y'all. No. No. Y'all told me to get as real as I can, and then go through the first 12 steps as real as you could, and I'd go through the second ones and get honest. You understand that? When you do this, get real honest. If you can do it the first time, God bless you, man. I couldn't. I did my best, but my best wasn't enough, because as I got, started going to more meetings, and as I, got a more clean time, I started to realize, as I started hearing y'all tell my story, because I ain't telling nobody else's story. I mean, it's not just my story. I'm telling y'all's story, too. When y'all started telling my story, think about this. How many of you have been at a meeting, check this out, and heard something that you did that you forgot about? You feel me? So I had to go, and when I did my steps the second time, I had to write stuff that y'all told me that I forgot about. Because you know why? It hurts so bad. You know, we have a subconscious that defends us from ourselves. Y'all know that, right? And then my conscious protected me from that subconscious stuff, but it was still in there, and it needed to be dealt with, man. It needed to be dealt with. And when I brought it up, dig this, man. My sponsor told me, you are only as free as your deepest, darkest secret that you reveal. I don't have no secrets no more, man. You ask me anything about me, it's like, look, here, you got it. Because I accept who I am. I'm a junkie who did junkie stuff. Yes, sir. That's it. I did junkie stuff. What I did, junkies do, that's it. Wasn't nothing to be sugar-coated, wasn't nothing pretty about it. Ain't no way I could make it look good, because it don't look good. It ain't supposed to look good. Junkie stuff don't look good. Real simple. Here's the blessing in who's an addict? Me. Now, as opposed to being a curse to my family, now let's talk about the flip side for a minute. Now, as opposed to being a curse, because see, when we walked through the door, people started locking up, locking down, hiding stuff, this, that, and the other. Now, I'm a blessing to, because I can walk in and they don't want me to leave. Here's the key. Why? Because I accept who I am. But you know what? There's four types, and I'm going to say this, man, and I want you all to hear this when I say it. And I ain't trying to teach you nothing. It's just something that God gave me in my sleep one time. There's four types of drug addicts. Four types. Dead. Hello. Using. Clean. And in recovery. Now, by process of elimination, feel me on this one from my heart, man, and I'm talking about the spirituality of Narcotics Anonymous. From my soul, from the essence of who I am, from my spirit, the spiritual side, again, I'm talking spirituality. I do not want to die as an addict. Bam, so that's gone. From my soul, from the very essence of who I am, from my spirit, I do not want to use again. But my disease does. Rodney really doesn't, man. I don't want this mess, man. God knows. My prayer is, God, kill me before you allow me to relapse. And I mean that from my heart. I'd rather die than to go back to where I came from. Now, I don't know about you. Maybe yours wasn't what mine was. That's your thing, not mine. My soul would rather die than to go back to that. So I really don't want to use. But watch this one. How many of y'all know somebody that's clean that you don't want to have nothing to do with? Their behavior is the same as somebody acting a fool in the street. They're coming in here talking out the side of their neck, holding the meeting hostage because of the BS. Man, my dog died and I can't believe it. Shut up. Shut up. And I understand your dog was your friend, this, that, or the other, and all that. But man, look, somebody is about to lose their child. Somebody's job is on the line. Somebody's home is in foreclosure because they use it. Somebody about to look, you understand what I'm saying? Somebody about to die. You don't, we don't know. Right? So I don't want to be just a clean addict. Because being clean ain't enough. All I got to do to be clean is don't use nothing. I had a lot of clean time because when I was broke, I was clean. When I was in jail, I was clean until somebody brought something around. You understand what I'm saying? So clean time, anybody can amass some clean time against our will. When I'm like this, I'm clean. So I don't want to just be clean. So by process of elimination, if I don't want to die, I don't want to use, and I don't want to just be clean, by process of elimination, there's only one thing less. That's recovery. But see, here's the hit. Now that I know I'm a junkie, now that I qualify, now that I got all of the evidence in front of me on paper with God's hand, it's in my spirit. I know, am I willing to do the work to do the rest? Because see, it ain't just about identifying with, you know, who is an addict. Okay, I qualify. We qualify. We're addicts. But what's next? You know, what's next? Okay, I'm an addict, man. So I need to substitute all of my energy that's going into my get high into recovery. But I don't know, y'all. Feel me on this one. We come in here. This used to crack me up, man. Because I never felt this way. Because my sponsor, I knew him from the set. And trust me, he was just as greasy as I was. So I came in here cool. I had an example. You understand? To have 5 years clean. I was cool. But we come in here, man. And it's like, I don't know you people. What? I don't fit in. What? We're the same junkies that you got high with. We just ain't getting high. How could you not feel as if you fit in with us when I've just told your story in three simple things? Too much, too often, too long. How could you not fit in with us? Well, I come from a different side of the tracks. When you was getting high, you was over this side of the tracks with me getting high. You know what it's like on both sides of the tracks. So come on back over. Come, you know, let's hang out. Let's do this, man. You know what I mean? Well, I have an education. You a smart junkie. Now what? You a smart junkie. You a smart junkie. We got to dig this, man. In the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, I have friends that have PhDs, man. Smart junkies. Got more degrees than a thermometer, man. Smart junkies. Smart junkies, man. My man raised his hand. My man, smart junkie. Dig this. Ain't none of us in here dumb because to survive one day in the streets, once you cross over into addiction, you got to have something going on because ain't nothing free and ain't nothing funny. Ain't nothing free. We got some of the most brilliant minds in the world are right in here in Narcotics Anonymous. And we come in here and act helpless. Act hopeless. Act like we don't have a chance. Look, man, one thing I know. Self-preservation is the first law of nature. My dad taught me that as a young man. Self-preservation is the first law of nature. My dad would have been 100 years old this year, and he meant that thing from his soul. When I was out there getting high, self-preservation, first law of nature. If you getting high, and I ain't got nothing, I'm going to find some kind of way to get yours, because I've got to have it. So why not now in recovery, self-preservation? If you getting yours, I'm going to try to get whatever you got to get mine. Same exact principle. Self-preservation, first law of nature. I got a crew that's so cold, because we accept who we are. And we like it. I got an excuse to be a fool sometimes. Everybody in this room has been a fool in recovery at some point in time. Been saying some of the dumbest things and did some of the dumbest. Our behavior is crazy because we have issues. But we don't give up. We don't give up. I got to keep using Lindsay. That's my dude, man. And me and Lindsay, we, you know, people think we probably kind of crazy because we go at it. We love this thing called recovery. We go at it 100% with everything we got, both barrels blazing and a double barrel shotgun. Because you know what? It's more to recovery than just not getting high. It's more to recovery than getting a whole lot of stuff. Go get you some stuff. Ain't nothing wrong with getting stuff. If you think of how much stuff we gave away, how many vacations we sent the dope man on, you better go on vacation. You better go get you a big screen TV. You bought the dope man a couple of them. You better buy you a nice car. Ain't nothing wrong with having nice stuff. Why? I'm an addict. I paid my dues by not having. Why not go and get something? I'm an addict. Who was the addict? Me. But I'm an addict with a chance today. You know, I got a shot at things, man, I got friends laying in the dirt right now. I help shovel some dirt on some of my boys. I do that. When my boys die using, I grab the shovel and I try to shovel one scoop on their butt, man. I do. I do, because I'm going to miss them. I'm going to miss them. I'm going to miss them. We all, everybody in here got somebody that they know that died, or a family member, somebody. But then I'm like, God, thank you, man, for me being a junkie and having a second chance. I was telling my man, what's your name, brother? Yeah. Kevin. I was telling my man, Kevin, before the meeting started, that, and I found this out a long time ago, a grateful addict will never get high. You cannot call yourself grateful and be high at the same time. What do you mean by that, Rod? When my dad died, I had 3 years clean, but I'm still grateful for my recovery. You know why? I took my junkie butt to a meeting. Why? Because I was an addict. Me. I qualified. I knew it. It was in my soul. Recovery ain't in your mind, and recovery ain't in your emotions. Recovery's in your behavior. It's in your soul. So I had to do recovery behaviors. My dad died. I left the hospital. I went home and cried like a girl, and I looked at my meeting list. And I went to the meeting in New Brighton that night, and I cried, and I hurt, and I hurt, and I cried. The next day, I went to a meeting, I cried, and I hurt, because I'm a junkie. And I know if I wasn't at the meeting, I know where I'm going to go. So I needed to be in a blessed place as opposed to a cursed place. You feel me? Because I'm a junkie. I know that. So I know it's two places for me, a place of blessing or a place of curses. We're talking spiritual retreats, so I'm going to come at you with some spiritual things here. Now, here's the hit. When my sister died on my birthday 5 years ago, I was working at a recovery house. I went to their recovery house, and I went to work that day because I went to visit her in California the month before. I was not going back out there. That's just that. I wasn't going. I saw her. I was satisfied. My man. I saw her, and I was satisfied. So I went to work that day, and I showed these people, you can remain clean when a family member dies. You don't. It does not have to overwhelm you. The truth of the matter is, keep breathing, you're going to die. Real simple stuff. Real basic 1+1=2 stuff, man. Nothing deep. Recovery's not deep. Don't pick up the first one. That's not deep. It's hard. It's hard. It's not deep at all. The second one ain't the one that gets us started. No, I ain't never messed up on the second one. That first one took me to places that I don't ever want to go back to. I'm going to share this, man. I'm going to sit down. We qualify now. We all understand. We have the spiritual retreat. We have the retreat. We understand that we are recovering addicts. Always remember that. Recovering. Four types. Don't forget. We're recovering addicts. We're willing to do the work. If you wasn't here to do some work, I mean, here's the evidence. You're here. So we're recovering addicts. So now we have a choice when we leave this spiritual retreat. When I leave in a few minutes from now, when you guys leave after the weekend is over, I still have to make a choice. Am I going to put myself in a blessed place? Because I know who I am. I am an addict. Am I going to put myself in a cursed place? Because I know who I am. I am an addict. I've qualified. Then I got to ask certain questions like this. Curse over here, blessing over here. I'm going through something. I'm going through something. I don't know what it is you're going through. If, hopefully you're not, but whoever's going through, you're going through something. Am I going to position myself in a blessed place or a cursed place? Am I going to the set or am I going to the meeting? Am I going to call the dope man or am I going to call the sponsor? Because see, now is the power of choice, and we got it. The first step said we admitted we were powerless. We ain't powerless no more, baby. No, sir. No, we're not powerless. And you can't make me think I'm powerless over drugs and alcohol no more because God gave me power through y'all, through the steps, through my sponsor, through my support group. Oh, I got power. I got two good kneecaps. They powerful. I'll get down. Ain't no shame in my game. Now, am I willing to pick up the phone? Am I willing to get on my knees, think about this, and do some things that we did out there, or am I going to get on my knees and pray? Feel me? You hear what I'm saying? The bottom line is this. Blessings and curses is based on where you position yourself. Real simple, you feel me, brother? Blessings and curses is based on where you position yourself. So I don't care what I'm going through, I position myself in a blessed place. Now, I might not feel blessed. I might not think that I'm blessed. But I know I'm blessed by where I position myself. I know I am. Because, see, I might not feel cursed. I might not think I'm cursed. But I know I'm cursed by the position that I put in myself. I'm an addict, man. My name is Rodney Gallup.
Thanks, Rodney. I would like to introduce the second speaker, is Corey Pete from the Legion Recovery Group and State College area of NA.
What's up, guys? I'm Corey. I'm an addict. I'm really glad he went first. My addiction right now wants to tell me that I don't belong up here and that I'm not good enough to be here, you know, because I'm still insane. And when I think who's an addict, you know, definitely I am. And my addiction wants me to compare myself to others. So right now I'm sitting here thinking, like, I haven't done a quarter of the stuff that he's done. You know, I'm not good enough to be up here because I never stuck anything in my arm. I'm not good enough to be up here because I didn't lose all my material possessions. But I'm glad that he got that thing out there about the common bond, because I can relate, and just like everybody else in here, I'm sure, when I was at the end of the road, it was either get clean or die. There was no other way. There was nothing else. I tried everything else. My story, you know, he started by qualifying his clean date, saying his clean date. I'll say mine. Mine's September 18th, 2008, so I don't even have a year. And it's funny that I'm here right now because, and I know Eric knows this guy, you know, the guy that asked me to come down here and do this right now has really been a big instrument, like a big part of my recovery so far. You know, he might have saved my life. And it was funny. He called me yesterday morning. He works these crazy-ass hours. He called me at, like, 6:30 in the morning and starts talking to me for, like, a half an hour. And I'm a student. I don't do 6:30 in the morning. And, you know, he's like, I'm used to being at retreats, where speakers, you know, he had called me and said something about doing this months ago. And I'm like, okay, yeah, whatever. I just agreed to it. But, you know, I'm used to thinking in the back of my head, like, oh, this is just one of those things where they just overbook, and, you know, I won't have to worry about it, because there'll probably be, like, 10 speakers for this one time slot. And when I was talking to him yesterday morning as the sun's coming up, and I'm rubbing my eyes, because that's the earliest I've been up in a while, you know, I'm like, Mark, man, are you serious? He's like, yeah, you're talking, dude. He's like, you better get ready. He's like, because it's on. And I was like, holy crap, and it got real. And I'm like, Mark, man, they're not going to want to listen to me. I don't have anything to say that these people are going to want to hear. I don't even have a year. And Mark's like, and this is the way he comes at me, and this is why I love him. He's like, dude, you need to get over yourself. He's like, get over yourself and just go up there and talk. And I was like, wow, okay, you know. And just to flip back to give you a little something like this guy where I'm coming, you know, and that's the way I need to hear stuff. Like, yeah, this isn't, you know, like what he was saying. You know, the only person that it's important to qualify that I need to qualify to is me, okay? I know I'm an addict. I need to make sure I remind myself of that on a daily basis, you know. But anyway, to get back, you know, I'll start at the beginning. Like I said, coming up on a year. And at the end, though, my clean date is September 18th officially, but it was September 16th when I knew I was done. That was it. I just couldn't do it anymore. And what that had come down to is for 4 months, you know, after I got introduced to my drug of choice, I went from being, like Rob was saying, that weekend warrior guy, you know, because I'm living proof that alcohol is definitely a drug. But I went from being that weekend warrior guy to being a person who, you know, I always hear people say, we're living on an animalistic level. And that has given me way too much credit. Okay, I don't remember the first time I heard this, but I can relate, because at the end, animals take care of themselves. Animals can clean themselves and eat. When I was done, I hadn't eaten in 5 days. You know, and just the last day, like I said, on the 16th, I took something that morning, you know, and the emotional, like I said, the physical stuff was still all there. I was in a bad spot physically. But it was that day that I took a slew of pills in the morning and knew that I was going to go to sleep. And I knew that I might not wake back up this time. And I was okay with that at that point. I just didn't care. You see, I wasn't consciously trying to commit suicide, but I wasn't consciously trying to live either. I had just stopped being a human being. I had nothing left emotionally. I was at the end. And by the grace of God, you know what I mean? That day, when I did wake up, and for about 2 hours I had a moment of clarity. You know, God, who I turned my back on. I always hear people say, you know, God forgot about me, and God turned, and that almost hurts me, because I made a conscious decision to turn my back on God. In fact, I was so arrogant and self-centered at the end of my addiction that I thought my problems were so big that even God couldn't help me. I didn't want to pray because I didn't want to take up God's time. He's got more important stuff to do. And it wasn't until I talked to this dude, Mark, when I was out of rehab for about 2 weeks, and I thought I would drop this spiritual bomb on him, right, because I'm still real arrogant and, you know, on that pink cloud coming out of rehab. And I tell him, he was sitting across from me at a breakfast table one morning, and, you know, I'm doing the thing, I'm doing my 90 and 90, and I'm going to meetings, and I'm sharing, and, you know, I'm learning all this new stuff. And Mark said, maybe you should pray about, I don't even remember what was going on, but I do remember what was said to me, and this is when I say, you know, Mark saved my life. I said something like, yeah, well, Mark, I could pray about that, but I don't really like to pray for myself because I don't want to waste God's time. I don't want to take up too much of God's time. Like, he's got to worry about wars and hunger and stuff like that. And Mark just looked at me, and he started laughing, and I was like, yeah, I was feeling pretty good about myself at that point. I'm like, uh-huh, I bet you wasn't ready for that. And he's just like, yeah, that's really freaking arrogant, man. Except for he didn't say freaking. And I was like, what? He's like, you think God can stop wars and cure hunger and do all this stuff, but he doesn't have time to help somebody like you? And I was like, oh, yeah. And ever since that day, you know, that was a big spiritual day for me. Ever since that day, I've never had trouble asking God to help me so that I can get out of my own way and help other people. But going back to things, you know, like, it's important for me because I have a real problem with self-acceptance. And a year ago, I had no idea that I was an addict. Well, I mean, I knew something was wrong. But I wasn't willing to admit that I was an addict. The arrogance, the self-centeredness of this disease, you know. I am that guy with the bachelor's degree and the master's degree, and God willing, in May, I'll have a PhD in nuclear engineering. And a year ago, I was on the floor in my bedroom, curled up in a ball, 23 hours a day, probably. I was, like I said, saying that I was living an animalistic lifestyle is really degrading to animals, because I was below that. I could not do anything. I couldn't shower. I mean, it was that quick. I went from being a weekend warrior to, like I said, my bottom, at least for this time, like that. I didn't even happen so fast that I didn't even know what was happening. I didn't know I had a choice either. But like he was saying, today I realized that, you know, even though I know better than to compare myself to others, I still do that. And my addiction still talks to me, and I have this negative attitude. But that's okay, you know. At least I know better, and I acknowledge that, and I can do something about it today. You know, I was at a thing in Lancaster this past winter, and I bet some people were there. And this was really cool because it's helped me out with my self-acceptance a lot. This lady who was the alternate speaker, Sheila, from Philadelphia, she was talking about, you know, acceptance and things like that. And she said something like, if you're not most impressed with your own story, then maybe your story isn't done yet. And that really, you know, I was like, wow. So as I stand up here today, I can say my story is the worst I heard because I had to live it. I was the one that had to go through that crap. I was the one that had to have the pain of, you know, like I said, not eating for 5 days. It's just insane stuff. I didn't know I had a choice. But anyway, when I think who is an addict today, you know, like he was saying, man, just the insanity. You know, still today, the insanity runs my life. I had to get up and go to the bathroom. I'm wondering why, for the last half hour, I honestly sat there and be like, why do I have to go to the bathroom so much? And maybe because when I got home from work, I drank like 3 cans of soda, chugged a bottle of water, and then on the way down here, I drank another fountain drink of soda. But yet, I still sit there and ask questions like, why do I have to do that? You know, I don't think. But it says in the reading that who's an addict we know. an addict is a man or woman whose life is controlled by drugs. And from the first time that I ever took a drink, my life at that point, I can't say that because I don't remember the first time I took a drink, but I do remember the first time I got drunk. And at that point, my life started being controlled by drugs and alcohol. One and the same thing to me. You know, for a normal person, I like to talk about insanity a lot. Because a sane person, if they had the consequences I had from that first time, okay, to any sane person, they would be like, whoa, this would be red flags, and they would think, my God, I shouldn't do that. I was sick for 3 days. Okay, I consumed enough of this substance to almost kill me and kept going back. I mean, that I just couldn't wait till I felt better so I could do it again. And that's insanity. And as I was, you know, as my disease would progress, like he was saying, you know, it wasn't until almost a year ago that I realized that the problem was with me. You know, the one is too many, a thousand never enough. That's basically the way it was. Today when I stand here, I don't see how, when I talk to some of my people that I work with that are normal, and they know I'm in recovery, and I try to explain this stuff to them, and I'm like, well, they're like, you can't even come out for a beer. Or you can't, I'm like, no. And they're like, well, I don't get that. And I'm like, listen to what I'm trying to say here. I'm like, I don't understand. I've never understood how you can have one beer or how you can drink half a beer and leave the bar and be okay with that. Like, I don't know what that feels like. When I take one sip or one of anything, I have to have it all. And if it was physically possible for me to do it all, and I mean all of it, in the world, without dying or becoming unconscious, I would do all of it. Like, that's the way I work. And they're like, wow, I don't understand that. I'm like, bingo. That's why you're not, you don't have to go to a meeting called Narcotics Anonymous every night. Okay? We don't have to understand each other. We just need to accept each other. Except that I'm probably not going to come to the bar and hang out with you on Friday nights because I don't want to go back to that place I was 12 months ago. Anyway, getting back to, you know, the problem now, like Ronnie said, I've had a lot of time, you know, I work in a laboratory. I got a lot of time to be up in my head. In the very beginning, that was not good. It's better now. I'm way less insane than I was when I started this journey. But it also gave me a lot of time to reflect. And I started looking back at my life and realizing that even before I ever took a drug or drank anything, you know, I was an addict. My friend likes to say this. He's speaking down at the amphitheater right now. He was the first to... I don't have a drinking problem. I don't have a weed problem. I don't have a pill. I have a substance abuse problem. It does not matter what the substance is. I'm going to abuse it. If I get bored enough, I will abuse a multivitamin. I would do that crap. I would see, just to see what would happen, to see if something would happen. I would take a whole bottle of multivitamins, like insanity. Normal people don't do that. And that's why, you know, for me, at least I can sit here today and look back at that and be comfortable with that, though. That's okay. That's who I was. I don't have to, I have choices today. I don't have to live like that. But the problem, you know, back in the day when I was active, and my run was about 14 years, the problem was never with me. It was with my environment, right? You know, in recovery, the only thing we can really control or change is us. And back in the day, you know, I tried to control everything else. And the problem was this was completely out of control. And I was never, the big problem was I was never willing to acknowledge that, and I was never willing to admit that. I do a meeting at a youth detention center, and God, I hate saying this, but there's this thing on the wall that they have for the kids, and it's Dr. Phil. And man, I do not like quoting Dr. Phil, but this is perfect for recovery. It says, you can't change what you don't acknowledge. And so for those 14 years when I was in denial about the fact that I have a substance abuse problem, I couldn't do a damn thing to change it. Right? And I mean, and it just got worse. But what I would always do is I would project to the future and think, okay, well, when this happens, then things will get better. Right? Like, when I go to college and I'm on my own and I don't have to live with the crap at home anymore, then things will get better. Things didn't. They got worse. I don't even really remember my undergraduate career, and somehow I made it through and got a degree. But so then I'm thinking, whenever I, you know, get my degree, things will get better, right? Because I'll have more responsibility, okay? I'll go to grad school, and then I'll have to be somebody, right? People will be looking up to me. So I got my degree. I went to grad school. Things got worse. I got to grad school, and I found out I only have to take one class a semester, and you're going to pay me to be there? Holy crap. It was off to the races at that point. You know what I mean? And I still wasn't done yet. So I thought, okay, once I get my master's degree, then things will be different, right? Because now I'll be a PhD student. I'll be this close to being a doctor. People, you know, will be definitely looking up to me at this point. I'll have students working for me. Things will get different. It got worse again, okay? And at this point, the insanity disease is really starting to pick up. And what he was talking about, the paranoia, I mean, I totally relate to that. I was so paranoid at this point that I had developed this social anxiety that was just so uncontrollable. It's like, man, if I was walking down the street and somebody made eye contact with me that I'd never seen before in my life, I swear to God, I thought they were plotting on me. I was like, what did I do? Who is this guy? What did I do last night? I know I didn't do nothing last night because I've been living in my apartment and using by myself for the last 2 months. And like turn around and watch them as they walk by just because somebody made eye contact with you, you know? And I lived like that. And I would have my friends who, you know, that I hadn't burned all the bridges with at the end come into my apartment and trying to get me to come out, and I would lock the door and hide because I was afraid that they were trying to get me. And these are guys that I've been friends with for 20 years. And I'm hiding behind couches, and I'm ducking under beds, and I'm like, I mean, I look out the people, and I see it. That's the person standing there, and I'm so crazy that I think that the cops must be up there, and the cops must be, and here's the thing, I haven't done nothing illegal. I mean, you know what I mean? But in my head, it's just insanity. And it got so bad that after I found my drug of choice, and I started running out of that. And I wasn't an addict, see, so I didn't want to go out and try to find it on my own. See, I had a doctor who I could play to get her to give me this shit, right? And so I would do that, but eventually, you know, she's going to catch on. And I didn't have, you know, I might be smart when it comes to books, but I'm not real street smart. I didn't have the smarts to go think, hey, maybe if I just go to another doctor and describe the same symptom, you know, whatever. So I'm running out of this stuff, man, and I start going through withdrawal, and it's not fun. And it's making me real sick. And to counteract that at this point, man, because I wasn't an addict, I wouldn't go out in the street and try to buy my drug of choice. So I started doing my drug of convenience, which was alcohol. And it took off. It got to a point where to feel normal on a daily basis, I literally had to drink all day long. To feel normal, to function. I would shake so bad. And I'm saying it, and I'm not like war-storying this. Just, I'm building up to the insanity part here. I would shake so bad that I couldn't even brush my teeth in the morning unless I had drank beforehand. I couldn't sign my name on the credit card slip at the liquor store or at the bottle shop because I was shaking so bad. Like, how crazy is that? I had to... The place where I had to go to get stuff, the stuff that was making me sick, and I knew it was making me sick, I kept going to get it anyway, and it was such a cyclical thing of insanity. Anyway, I kind of lost where I was going with that, but I got to a point where I decided, okay, enough's enough, you know. My girlfriend broke up with me, and that was great, because that was just getting in the way of my addiction. Like, when she left, it was on now, you know what I mean? Now there is no one that I'm answering to. My parents don't live near me. I'm on. And it went, and it was on. And like I said, it lasted for a couple months. And I finally got to a point where, you know, my parents, people started showing up, and I couldn't dodge them anymore, and I couldn't hide. And they knew something was wrong. And so I tried. So I tried to go home to my parents' house and said, listen, I got to dry out. And, because I still wasn't ready to admit that I had a problem with anything else, just alcohol at this point, right? And so I get there, and I'm doing my drying out thing, and, you know, it starts to get bad. And they start talking about a hospital, and I'm tough. I'm like, no, I'm not going to a hospital because I don't know what they're going to do. They're just going to preach at me. Well, then it became inevitable because I ended up having a seizure that almost killed me in my parents' house, on my living room, in their living room, with my dad having to hold me down on the couch while I'm shaking so I don't shake to death or bite my tongue off or something while he's calling 911 to come get me. And to this day, like, I still can't fathom what it's like in my head to imagine what it would be like to have to see your kid go through that. I don't have any children, but anyway. So I'm in the hospital for 3 days, right? And I have social workers coming. And I have doctors coming to me and saying, listen, man, like, they're not even telling me that I'm an addict or an alcoholic. They're just begging me. All they're saying is, please, just, why don't you, we got this list of AA meetings here, why don't you just go check one of these out? And I'm like, not how? I'm like, no, I don't have a problem. I was just in the hospital for going through withdrawal, having a freaking seizure that almost killed me, and I'm still not ready to admit that I have a problem. And I got so tired of having them come into this hospital room and tell me, and this is the thing, they weren't telling me anything. They were just putting this out there, saying, here, look, here's a meeting list. Maybe you should go check one out. That I decided that when I got out of that hospital, the first thing I was going to do was go drink to show them how much of an alcoholic and an addict I wasn't. And 3 weeks later is when I woke up that day. And I had that moment of clarity and realized, like, holy crap, you know, I could have died. And I made a phone call. And at that point, there was just no other way. I had reached that emotional bottom. Like I said, I didn't lose my job. I didn't lose my apartment. I didn't lose any of this. But, man, I was dead inside. I literally stopped caring. I mean, think about that. I didn't care. I did something and didn't care if I woke back up, if I died. It seemed like a perfectly reasonable thing. Do this. Hey, man, you know, I'm thinking, I might not wake back up. Okay, whatever. And fall out. That's insanity. And so I woke up. And I started making phone calls. And I'm like, nah, there's got to be a different way. And I got, luckily, my advisor, my boss, whatever, was good enough to take me to the hospital. I called him. Because I knew that if I called my parents, right, I'm good at manipulating. I knew if I called them and I got cold feet, I'd be able to back out. I knew if I told somebody like him, then there was no turning back. You know what I mean? And, you know, this guy's like, think about that. How many employers would keep an employee on to call that, you know, it just doesn't happen. That's why I'm really grateful to be here. I liked what he said. You're not in recovery if you're not grateful. That's what I heard about it. If you can't have fun with your recovery, and man, we had fun. When we were on the way up here, my God. If you could have heard the conversation that was going on in that car, there's no way you would let me be talking up here right now. So you'd be like, these guys are not better. They are crazy. As a matter of fact, call the hospital. They need to go back in there. But anyway, I got to rehab, and I still wasn't ready to say it. You know, it was tough for me to sit there that night and say, I'm Corey, I'm an addict. And the insanity thing, you know what I mean? And it wasn't until somebody at rehab pointed out to me, we were making a list of stuff, and write down some of the craziest things you've done, or just some things that you've done that you're not proud of or whatever. And as I'm going through this list, and he's sitting there, and I'm like, but I'm not insane, right? Insane people sit around like, you know, and do whatever. I'm like, that's not me. I don't have a problem with insanity. I'll admit, you know, I'm powerless. I know, okay, I can't do one, whatever, you know? And I was arrogant like that. I'm like, I thought they were going to teach me how to slow it down, or they were going to teach me how to use responsibly. I really didn't get this thing, man. I did not get it. But I sat there, and I wasn't even listening until that day, and he picked up my paper, and he's like, he read off the first thing, and I'm laughing, like, I'm proud of that, right? Toxic pride. Probably, I'm like, yeah, that was crazy. And he reads the next one, I'm like, yeah, dude, that was so insane. And he read down this list, and he's sitting there, and he's just laughing, and I'm like, it hit me. That's the day that then the next time I said I'm Corey, I'm an addict, I meant it. And I started listening and I started realizing that all those people in that rehab with me and all those techs that were in recovery and all those counselors in recovery knew exactly how I felt. That was the first time that I actually, but here's the big thing, that was the first time that I qualified for myself. Okay? Like, I used to joke around about being an addict and an alcoholic all the time, and I would use the 12-step programs as a punchline in the past. But that day, when I sat there and looked at that list and realized that all that shit up I had done was insane, that's when, you know, it became clear, like, I am an addict. And so, you know, I got out of rehab, started doing this recovery thing. Like I said, that was almost a year ago. And it's cool today because I don't have to hold anything back. I don't have any secrets. you know, these two guys walked in, and I'm glad they did, because it's funny. There's another one, and I will say this, and I'll wrap this up. I still didn't know what I was doing, right? The day I left rehab, right, I'm going up, and I'm getting my vitamins and whatever at this med thing, and I'm in such denial, right, because I got really comfortable there, right? They're protecting me. I can't do anything, right? And it was nice. I was eating again. We had rec time. I got to go to class. I felt like a student again. I was learning all this cool stuff and learning some stuff about myself for the first time and getting out of my own way and letting my higher power do some things for me for the first time and show me some things about myself that I could maybe acknowledge then and try to change. And then I'm sitting there one day and I'm waiting in line and I look out across, you know, there was a sewer plant across the street, I'll never forget this, with this huge flame, and it stunk so bad in my rehab all the time. It was like I never would get back there. Then I realized, like, holy crap, in an hour and a half, the van's coming to pick me up in an hour and a half, and I still haven't even thought about it yet. I'm in denial. I'm like, oh, my God, in an hour and a half, and I started crying. I'm like, I got to do this myself. I almost want to run back down to where everybody else was eating breakfast and be like, which one of you techs is coming with me for this first couple weeks to watch me? And, no, I knew that wasn't going to happen. So anyway, I got back to my hometown, State College, and I got hooked up with these guys. First meeting I went to was my home group. And two of them were here. And I remember calling my, and I know they're addicts. Trust me. They know I'm an addict. And I kept calling my counselor from rehab, saying stuff to him. And I remember one day I was talking and I'm like, you know, these guys, you know, I'd hung out with them a couple times at this point. And I'm like, these guys, man, he's like, they're really doing this recovery thing. I'm like, this is no joke. I'm like, I didn't think, you know, because we joked around so much in rehab, it became like, just okay, like, let's have fun, but then do recovery when people were looking. Then when I got out, I was like, oh my God, I got to do this now because I can do whatever I want. I'm like, these guys, man, I'm like, they don't joke around much, but they take this really seriously. You know, they have fun and stuff. I'm like, I'm almost like I was confused. And my counselor from rehab, I was like, these guys are like programmed monks. I'm like, they live, they breathe this stuff. I'm like, they're quoting shit out of the text. And he's like, and my counselor from rehab just goes, good. Do what they do. And since then, I've been doing what they do. And the only reason I can stand up here today is because I've done what they've done. And I've done what you all have done. And been listening to people and getting out of my own way. And I just want to say I'm really glad. This is the first time I've had an opportunity to do something like this. And, you know, it took me a long time to realize that I needed something bigger than myself, that you all were a part of that, to do anything in my life. Thanks.